So just by way of background, one of the reasons that we decided to undertake this survey, it's the first time CEDA's done a survey like this, a nationwide poll of community attitudes to economic growth, but also the policy priorities that matter most to people, and attitudes to work. The reason we did that was because we were trying to understand why this disconnect seems to exist between a policy agenda that people are trying to pursue in support of economic growth and the lack of interest or resonance of that in the wider community. So that's sort of our thinking in wanting to commission this survey. And it's also part of a process that CEDA's undertaking in thinking about our own research agenda and how we can structure our own research agenda to better connect with the community, but also to have a greater impact with policymakers and policy influencers. So as I said, what we wanted to do was ask people after 26 years of uninterrupted economic growth, how does the community feel that it's connected to them? How satisfied are they with their circumstances? Who do they think has gained from economic growth? And what are the issues that are most important to them personally, but also from the perspective of the future of Australia? We surveyed 3,000 people across the country, so it is a statistically robust survey, and it was designed to be robust so that when you look at the state results as well, those results, the samples for each of the states is actually big enough that you can draw meaningful conclusions from those results as well. And as I said, this is intended to be an important backdrop to our ongoing research about what economic development really means for Australia and how we reposition our own research agenda. So when we asked people who do we think had gained from 26 years of uninterrupted economic growth, and we deliberately did that because anyone who follows the economic reform agenda at the moment, this is a common refrain. We celebrate this record run of economic growth, and it was my view that this is something that isn't connecting with people, and I have to say that was confirmed by our survey results. So who felt that they had personally gained a lot from 26 years of uninterrupted economic growth? Just 5% of the population. That's nationwide, and it was a similar result here in New South Wales. Who felt that they'd gained a little? 40% of the population. In New South Wales, it was 42%. Who felt that they'd personally not gained at all? 44% of the population felt that after 26 years of uninterrupted economic growth, they had not gained personally at all from that. And then there was about 11% who said, I can't see the 55. There was about 11% who said that they didn't know. Now, I just want you to pause here for a moment, because what this tells you is that the majority of people in Australia, when asked, don't feel that they personally have gained at all from this world record-breaking run of uninterrupted economic growth. And that, as I said earlier, it's a similar number for here in New South Wales. It's about 53%. Who do people think have gained? Well, the biggest winners are large corporations that people, 74% felt that large corporations had gained a lot, and then there's roughly another 10% that have gained a little, so you get a very, very big number there. And a similar number believing that the people who've gained the most are senior executives, presumably senior executives in those large corporations. What were some of the other interesting results? We asked people how they were faring on their current incomes, and one in three said that they were finding it difficult or very difficult to live on their current incomes. So what's the message that we take from this? Well, the simple message that we took from this is that this sort of narrative that growth equals prosperity, the narrative that we should pursue growth and we should pursue reforms that underpin growth because it's in everyone's best interest, is not a narrative that's cutting through in any way with the wider community. Now, when we've been asked about this in terms of the media and to explain this, one of the things that I've liked to draw out is that actually I think there's one answer that people can give to this, which is a simplistic view that people actually don't know how good they've got it. And that they don't really understand economic growth and that's why they don't feel that they've benefited from it. I actually don't agree with that. I actually think that what the survey tells you is that these people are living an experience which sits beneath the headline numbers. So I'm an economist. We roll those numbers out all the time. Sustained periods of strong headline economic growth, tick. Sitting underneath that, of course, we've had strong population growth, but GDP per capita, which of course is what drives living standards, has actually been pretty flat. And we know that wages growth has been pretty flat. Right? And we also know that around the country, cost of living is something that we hear about time and time and time again. So I think what people are telling us is that while we want to focus on economic growth and say economic growth is good, of course, economic growth is just a proxy for what it delivers to people in terms of their quality of life. And what we're hearing from this survey is that that sustained period of economic growth hasn't actually delivered for them the quality of life that they were expecting in terms of their day-to-day lived experience. I think it also reminds you that sort of casting a line back and saying let's reflect on a quarter of a century actually probably doesn't really matter that much to people either, because what they're reflecting on is what's happening to them right here, right now. So of course, one of the things that we then wanted to do was to understand, well, what are the policy issues that do matter to you, right? If we're saying that reform agendas aren't connecting, it's not resonating with you either because you don't connect growth, but are you connecting to the issues that are being raised? And we got a really clear message from people here, and this was a really, really strong, clear message around the country, whether you looked at urban, regional, remote, whether you looked at young people, older people, retired people. And what mattered most to them were five headline things. Reliable basic health services, reliable low-cost essential services, accessible, stable, affordable housing, affordable high-quality chronic disease services, and reduced violence in homes and communities. This was everywhere. Now, probably not surprising, right? What really matters to you? Your health, your safety, roof over your head. When I drilled down into some of the statistics that sit underneath these in terms of conversations about the quality of our healthcare system and things like that, one of the things that really surprised me was that, particularly when you look at things like chronic disease services, that actually Australia has a very high proportion of people who are living with a number of chronic diseases, and Australia actually has a high proportion of people who live in ill health, even adjusting for life expectancy. So again, it's not surprising that these things are cropping up on the most important lists. When we released the headline surveys in Canberra, I have to tell you that what people were talking about that week was, without exception, taxation. And we were hoping that we might get more of a conversation around some other things that mattered. And actually, if you look at the budget, this year's federal budget, and you look beneath the tax headlines, there are actually some really interesting things in there that go directly to these issues that people are talking about. But in my view, they're not being raised with anywhere near the voice that people would like them to be raised. Let me just call out that one of the other issues that popped up a little bit more in New South Wales was mental health services, and that's come up in different states as well. One of the things that's attracted people's attention, possibly because we put it in the media release, was that reduced commuting times were unimportant. Access to high-quality information and communication technologies, also unimportant, and the ability to move between jobs and sectors with ease were also rated as unimportant to people. I think a couple of those were pretty surprising to us, and the commuting times one, of course, is something that's been called out a bit, and I'm sure that will come up in our conversation later on after lunch. We had some issues in there, and sorry, I should have paused earlier and just explained how we focused on the policy issues that mattered to people. We actually presented people with a range of 30 issues that sort of fell within a framework of economic development, so different dimensions of economic development. And they were asked to, they were shown groups of six of these issues in different combinations repeatedly, and they were asked to repeatedly choose which was the most important and the least important to them. So you get a picture, a very clear picture of what matters the most and what's sort of regarded, at least in a relative sense, as relatively less important. And then in the middle, you get these interesting issues for which you tend to get a lot of people saying they're really important and a lot of people saying they're really unimportant. And you can sort of think about that as people are a bit indifferent to them, or you can think about those as being contested. So that's a sort of a quick rundown on how we did the survey. And the ones that sort of fell in the indifferent or contested category consistently around the country was affordable, high-quality private health insurance, and higher minimum wages came up here in New South Wales. Then we asked people to do the same exercise, but thinking not just of yourself, but thinking about the future of the country. And again, a really, really consistent set of messages. High quality and accessible public hospitals. Strong regulation to limit foreign ownership of Australian land and assets. High quality and choice of aged care. Increased pension payments. Tough criminal laws and sentencing. And then coming up the list here in New South Wales was protection of national parks and wildlife. And actually, interestingly, that also came up in Queensland. So what came up as as the least important, a strong private school system, lower company taxes, an increased humanitarian intake of refugees, less business regulation, and a strong private hospital system. Let me remind you that we were in Canberra releasing this with the lower company tax debate raging. I guess we were saved by the fact that there was no surprise in that. But again, you can see that the competitiveness or sustainability of business from a competitiveness perspective certainly isn't rating as being that important to most people. And perhaps not surprisingly, the most contested issue from a national perspective was immigration. And that went to the level of immigration overall. And it was presented as lower immigration was that important, but also around limitations of foreign worker visas, so the 457 visa issue. So what do we conclude from this? What we concluded from this is that actually the compact between community and government remains really important. And to me, the most compelling story in all of this, and to be honest, I couldn't have asked for it to be told better if I'd planned the survey, was the one around health. So when we asked people what mattered to them, they said basic healthcare. And we did structure the national choices to try to give us a bit of insight in, if you think something's important to you, how do you want it addressed? And the survey respondents told us that very clearly. So basic health matters to them. How do they want it addressed? Through the public system. Public healthcare. Right? And then slip right in the middle of that, the most contested issue, private health insurance. Now, if you've been following the media on health over the last sort of 4 to 8 weeks, certainly in Victoria, one of the things that's popping up a lot is this uncertainty around affordability of private health insurance, what your private health insurance delivers you. There's been a lot of talk about going to public hospitals and asking whether you have private health insurance and then facing out-of-pocket expenses because you do have private health insurance. So I think there's a very confused set of policies and circumstances out there around what you get where in terms of healthcare. There has been, of course, a sort of push going on to deal with the challenges around technology and the costs of that, expectations in the healthcare system, demographic shifts, and all of that cost burden. There has, of course, been this push for greater self-provisioning, including through private health insurance. And I think what this is telling you is that people are concerned about that. I think what this is telling you is that people have some issues around the certainty with which they see their future care and their ability to access and afford quality care. Now, maybe I'm making too much of that, but to me, that seems to be a pretty strong story that comes out of this. And there are quite a number of areas when you look at the ways in which people were looking for issues to be addressed nationally, the response was government. All right, so that compact remains really, really, really strong. If you go back and have a look at the full report, one of the reasons we focused on this is because if you look at the future challenges that we face as a country, a lot of those challenges are going to involve new ways of doing things. If it's human services, the provision of human services that are going to meet community expectations, that are going to be accessible, that are going to be high quality and going to be affordable to the nation, we are going to need to see innovation. We are going to need to see the private sector involved in that. But at the moment, the community is not there. So if we're going to drive a reform agenda that's going to bring the community with us, they need to be engaged in all of those conversations. And quite frankly, they need to have the certainty about the outcomes that will be delivered, to get them to support that. And to me, that's a really important message around transparency, around outcomes, around people having transparency around the outcomes that are being provided through services, and us thinking about how we get to that point. Because that seems to me to be the message from this survey. The other messages, which I've already touched on, of course, running a simple narrative that growth equals prosperity, people are not buying that. Running an agenda, I've talked about reform in the healthcare sector. Across the country, we need to see productivity. If you think economic growth doesn't resonate, I'm pretty sure you understand that productivity as a concept doesn't resonate. Most people don't think that productivity has delivered them what they want. They think it's delivered them less certainty, longer working hours, and less pay. And if you think that people are equating strong business sector with prosperity, I think our survey reminds us that that too is not the case. That sector is seen as being the large beneficiary of 26 years of economic growth and a prosperity which they feel, that most people feel they are not connected to. And these are all very, very important challenges and messages. So where we need to get to is a place where we are talking about prosperity in a way which aligns with community expectations, and we better connect economic growth and economic opportunity to the benefits that the community desires and actually receives. And we're going to have to get to a place where we actually meet those community expectations through innovation, through productivity. We are going to have to involve the business sector, of course, not just in doing what they're doing now, but actually in bringing innovation to how we think about things like human services, thinking about how we deliver better, more affordable essential services. They are all part of that important puzzle. But at the moment, that's not connected. And so CEDA certainly has a role to play, I think, in that. Let me just quickly race through a couple of other issues that we looked at. And we can pick these up further in our Q&A, if you like. But we did ask people a range of questions around how they're faring at work. On the whole, people were pretty satisfied with their working conditions, satisfied with pay, and not surprisingly, your levels of satisfaction were higher the more secure your employment was. So that's a little bit of a no-brainer. We asked people about work-life balance as well. Again, on the whole, people were fairly satisfied with things that you might think about in terms of flexibility and work-life balance. People were reasonably satisfied with travel and commute times to work, their ability to take leave, things like that. And again, surprisingly, people were relatively satisfied with the commuting times. And one of the things that really surprised me was how few people commuted for more than an hour. I suppose the number's still big, but 76% of people in New South Wales were commuting for an hour or less, and nationally that was upwards of 80%. So I guess in my mind I was thinking that maybe people would be spending more time commuting. Certainly I live close to the CBD in Melbourne. It takes me half an hour, so maybe that's just me living in my own bubble. One of the things I will call out that came through in the national survey, a little bit less so here, but one of the things that splits on demographics very clearly was that the flexibility to work from home is something that matters to people, and it really matters to young people. I call that out for people who are employers in the room, because if you haven't got your head around that, the survey is really, really, really clear that that is the one area where younger people are feeling dissatisfied, with roughly two-thirds of younger people saying that they're dissatisfied with that element of flexibility in the workplace. And then we also asked people about how they're feeling about technology. And again, this was probably surprising. People were a lot more optimistic about what technology meant for them. They were a lot more optimistic about their capacity to absorb technology in the workplace and for that to be complementary to their work rather than as a threat. With 69% of people in New South Wales saying that they would welcome new technology, roughly the same as what we saw nationally. And about 16% worried that that technology would replace them. Some people haven't been surprised by that. I thought that was maybe a little bit more optimistic than what we were expecting. I think I will leave it there. I'll just flip through that one and then just draw your attention to the fact that one of the things we tried to do with our report this time was to engage people in a different way And we've developed some data interactives so that if you're interested, you can go online, answer some questions and have a look at how your views compare with those of the broader survey respondents, and you can slice and dice things in a few different ways. So please feel free to have a look at that. And as always, if you've got any feedback, it is something that we're trying to do a little bit differently, so I'd love to hear how people have found that. And with that, I'm going to close my presentation. We'll have some lunch, and then we've got a fantastic panel who are going to come up afterwards to have a bit of a chat and take some questions from the floor. So thank you.